reduction in waiver and fees, flexibility and setbacks. There's lots of things to consider.
So let me make a plea, and if Alan's in the queue, we'll hear from him. But I would welcome something in writing that laid out a menu of options, including cities you want us to look at, because I think now is the time to give to put this into the concept plan that we give to the staff to flesh out. I wouldn't want to miss this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor Hales. My name is Sam Noble. I lived in the Buckman neighborhood for a decade next to a fourplex and two duplexes, and it wasn't scary. It wasn't a big deal. I had personal relationships with many of the people who lived in those structures. That kind of mild density helped support the vibrant, walkable neighborhood that that Buckman is and has been for some time. And I don't see any reason that these things shouldn't be legal basically everywhere in the city. That's a duplex with an attached, or sorry, with a detached ADU, as this proposal suggests, or even go further. And that's every lot in the city. When I have kids, I want to know that they have a place in Portland that isn't necessarily a small apartment in a big building. I'd like them to have some more options, something a little quieter. I try to get more detail into my written testimony when I submit it. Hasn't come in yet. I want to say that the only aspects of this proposal that I find really objectionable at all is that I think the allowed floor area ratio is just a little too low. I think maybe it ought to be closer to 0.8, 0.7, something in that range. And that's just because I think that there's a very, very vocal portion of this community that feels like we need more modesty in our buildings. And as a just kind of a personal value, I don't think that that's a thing that we should be imposing on people, that you have to build a small house because this neighborhood was built for less wealthy people than the people who built in that other neighborhood, something like that. It feels wrong to me. The other thing that I'd really like to see that you guys do is to make sure that parking doesn't end up competing with living space for people. My reading of the latest proposal is that floor area, if it's above ground, that's garage space, that's living space, whatever. And, parking's expensive to build, and if somebody's willing to pay for it, and as a driver I am and have been, I'd like that to not compete. I think if you're going to build a detached garage in your yard, as I have, you ought to be able to put a little apartment above it and not feel like you're having to choose between the two. Mm-hmm. And I'm building one of these today, and I think that it's going to be a great little use of land, and it's going to leave me some ground space to have a garden and still be able to keep my cars off the street.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
I forgot.
Please. Yeah, just leave it with Carla and she'll make copies for us. Or if you already have. That's good. That's fine. Thank you very much.
The next three are Maggie McGann, Jim Gorder, and Michael Molinaro. And they'll be followed by Mary Ann Schwab. And then number 8, Barbara Strunk. And I believe Sarah Canteen is not speaking until the 16th. Is that correct?
Okay, thank you.
And then Bob Wyatt will be in that other group.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Maggie McGann. I am also one of the members of the Residential Infill Committee. I was on as a representative for Habitat for Humanity and a lifelong Sunnyside resident. I'm a little nervous because I've never done this before.
You're doing fine.
So I was nervously looking forward to being here today, but I think in the face of the election last night, it became hard, and it feels like we're just in the details, but I told myself that we're here, and I'm here because, as Secretary Clinton said, it's not just a detail, it's your family, and it's a big deal. So creating more housing opportunities for Portland families who get bid out over and over again, 8 times, 10 times, 15 offers, is a big deal. It's a big deal to fight for economic diversity throughout our city and throughout our neighborhoods. The infill proposal creates new important housing choices for Portlanders. Creating more diverse housing options means more type of people can live in our neighborhoods and throughout our city. Last night, I was able to celebrate a silver lining of the election with a number of you as we passed the affordable housing bond. It was an amazing and important accomplishment. I think that this infill proposal is also an important part of our package for housing solutions. in the city. I think it will provide a broader array of housing choices for a broader array of Oregon, of Portlanders. I also would like to see it go farther. I think there are ways that we can support, we have opportunities to directly promote affordable housing in this as well. But the bottom line is we need more choice between mid-rise studio apartments and large single-family homes, often for only a single person. We need homes for families, we need homes for seniors, we need affordable homes. We can move toward those goals by allowing people access to our neighborhoods for our teachers and nurses. I, as for Habitat, have built for nine years, I've built 12 to 1,300 square foot duplexes for families. This can work for our families. I'm a lifelong Portlander, like everyone else in the city. I see that the city is changing. Portland is rising. We need to make sure it's a place that rises, that everyone can rise. And it's a big deal and not a detail.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Jim Gorter. I was a member of the Residential Infill Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And I'm speaking today on behalf of a group calling itself the RIPSAC 7, a coherent and cohesive third of the RIPSAC appointees. The extensive written testimony you'll receive today represents the group's positions and lists the names of the RIPSAC 7 members. You will hear from them today and next week in person. We embrace the mayor's concerns about demolitions, inappropriate infill, and affordability, but we reject many portions of the concept report. We do have some recommendations. Among them are, first, create development typologies that fit the neighborhood context and aspirations and ensure that the scale of houses fits neighborhood context. One size does not fit all neighborhoods. Develop strategies that directly reduce demolitions. Second, direct density and middle housing around centers consistent with the comprehensive plan. Test the middle housing ideas in areas that have expressed need and support before expanding to other parts of the city. Drop the unprecedented widespread use of the housing overlay, opportunity overlay. It is deceptive and no substitute for good planning and zoning. Third, allow confirmation of historic underlying lot lines only in contiguous R2.5 zones. We care deeply about our city, and we applaud the effort to consider how and where to focus housing density and how to guide the growth of the city in a period of rapid change. The residential infill project was a promising start that ultimately ran entirely off the rails. If the concern is affordability, the project is a false promise. If the concern is equitable housing access in every neighborhood, this was never an infill project objective and is a false promise. If the concern is a more walkable, lively city, this is a false promise. If the concern is a reduction of house size, this is a false promise. And finally, if it's an attempt to reduce demolitions, no, it will not do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much again. We look forward to getting your written testimony with specifics.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Molinaro. I was part of the Residential Infill Committee, and I, too, am part of the SAC 7. Centers and corridors. This is the planning precept that we were all asked to embrace during the recent comprehensive planning process. Why? Because it's a good one. It encourages growth near transit, services, and jobs. The comprehensive plan uses this phrase 49 times. Maps are dedicated to it. I know this concept works, because I live in Sunnyside, through which run vibrant corridors, and it is the center that is the poster child for walkable neighborhoods. Instead of this infill plan following the comp plan centers and corridors, it blankets the city with a zoning density greater than the R2 multifamily zones. This is unusual, as we have heard again and again that there is enough existing capacity to welcome the next 20 years of Portland's growth. And at your work session last week, staff again reinforced this. We support additional density around centers and, where appropriate, along corridors. We do not support the scattershot densification proposed in this plan. In my own Sunnyside, I encourage changing zoning from R2.5 to R2 along sections of Hawthorne and Belmont to allow the missing middle housing that we all know is needed. This request fell on deaf ears. These locations at end-grain blocks and adjacent to major streets are exactly where planner Daniel Parolik advocates. In his speech on October 7th, he stated, "Missing middle is not for everywhere." This advice is clearly ignored in this plan. At Council's February 2nd missing middle work session, the idea of testing 7 targeted areas as missing middle housing studies areas was presented. See attached map. We encourage you to act on this suggestion and test these infill concepts to see if they deliver the hoped-for results.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your work on this. Thank you.
The next three are Marianne Schwab, Barbara Strunk, and Bob Wyatt. That's 8 and 10. And after them will be 11, 12, and 13, Ruth Adkins, Nick Sovey, and Mary Kyle McCurdy.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Who's on first? Go ahead, Marianne.
Thank you. My name is Marianne. Hello, everyone. For the record, my name is Marianne Schwab. I'm a community advocate, and I appreciate the time we're taking to review this, and I have some questions about process. For the record, I attended 4 of the 6 residential open houses scheduled between June 15th and August 15th, when most ONI coalitions and neighborhood associations do not meet. While I can't speak to how many coalitions and neighborhood association boards and land use transportation committees were able to review and take action on the residential infill initial report, let alone the last-minute bait-and-switch shenanigans by the Portland for Everyone, Thousand Friends of Oregon program. Granted, I was taken by surprise when invited to attend their Portland for Everyone's work session to assist their supporters prepare talking points for today and next week. Actually, I felt blindsided, and maybe you did too. I did watch your work session. I don't remember any of these last-minute shenanigans in your first work session. Historically, when city council chambers have standing room only, citizens are invited to return the following week. I trust you will keep the sign-in sheets available for newcomers wishing to testify on Wednesday, November 16th. I'm also asking you to schedule a second work session to review the testimony today and on the 16th. The residential infill concept report represented by the 7, I support them 100%, and I'm asking you, please don't rezone us. And just a second ago, you heard people about parking and overflow parking. I live within a block of 106 units. Today, I could not get out of my driveway. A car was blocking it. And early this morning, there was a furnace company blocking my driveway. The overflow parking must be addressed. And the developer by right on these remnant lots, and the tip of the iceberg is Peacock Lane, my heart is broken that the Grinch will be stealing Christmas by adding a cereal box between 2 1925 English-style cottages. This is wrong. And if this is the example and you're going to be changing our neighborhoods like this, it's a mortal sin. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Barbara Strunk. I am the United Neighborhoods for Reform representative on the residential infill project. The assertion that this proposal will provide affordable housing does not hold up to close analysis. Increasing density or upzoning is the center of this proposal and will cause land prices to go up even further. Current land price in Inner East Side is between $400,000 and $800,000 per lot. With the cost of land acquisition so high, there is no formula that can produce housing units affordable to houses making less than 100% of the median family income. A builder can outbid a family for a house to be demolished and further increase the gap between those with plenty of money and those without enough money to buy a house. In my neighborhood over the last 3 years, the average price of a demolished house that was replaced by 2 or more houses was $466,000. The average land cost per new unit was $264,000. The average price of a new house in this same group, two units or three units replacing a single house, was $738,000. We need analysis like this of the current state of the market to be done by the city. I have not seen that yet. Don't rely on the market to make things turn out okay. With this proposal, the city has given up all planning. This proposal is simply deregulation that allows the imperfect market to determine the future of our neighborhoods. Analysts have stated that the current reason we have a housing crisis is that we trust in the private market to solve the problem. Increased supply does not lead to more affordable housing. One of the underlying themes of this proposal is that if we rezone our inner city and allow for higher density in single-family neighborhoods, we will have more supply of affordable houses. We debate that assertion. Analysts debunk the theory that construction of additional housing units will relieve pressure on affordability. A UC Berkeley study states that it will take 30 years to produce affordable housing to the first-time home buyer. Trickle-down economics has failed in the housing market. Duplexes and triplexes are primarily rental housing. Resident owners will be displaced. Portland will transition to a city of investor owners and renters. The idea that house sizes will be smaller needs to be taken a look at. The proposal states that a house on a 5,000-square-foot lot will be limited to 2,500 square feet. When you think about it, the house is actually closer to 4,000 square feet. You have 2,500 square feet for the main house, 1,200 square feet for the basement, and a 15% bonus for density, more like 4,000 square feet. So that really needs to be taken a close look at.
So I'm going to ask you to wrap up, but I also have a question for you. So,
okay. The most affordable houses are the ones already standing, and many of the existing homes are smaller than any of the new ones. We must address the housing affordability issue as a regional issue with care and urgency, not as an excuse to provide a handout of speculative profits to developers at the cost of demolition, displacement, and livability.
So let me pose a question, and don't need to answer it now, but given the sort of the disparate view of this process that we've heard already in this hearing from two different groups within the committee, and that's fine. We don't have to reach perfect consensus ever, and certainly not at this stage of the process, and it's okay that there's a diversity of opinion about this, but if you go back to the staff's presentation about the goals of this project, one was to address scale. And I'm not, by the way, in asking these questions and talking about this, I'm not assuming that the proposal in front of us is right. I'm assuming it's going in the right direction, but that it needs perhaps tuning. That's my working assumption. So we're trying to deal with scale, we're trying to deal with housing choice, and we're trying to deal with narrow lots. Those are the three topic areas. And yet, listening to this presentation, particularly when you talk about affordability and others talk about housing choice, I'm actually assuming we're looking at both issues of affordability and housing choice, and those are both good ideas, and that we don't necessarily always address both in any given housing type. Back to Steve's question about isn't two $400,000 houses better than one $700,000 house? We don't have to get hypothetical about this. Let me tell you about three real houses in Portland. One of them, and they're all in a great old Portland neighborhood. One of them had a single woman in it whose children had grown and moved out and who'd just gone through a divorce. One had a couple in their middle years whose kids had all flown the coop and gone off and done their thing. And the third had a family with three teenage and college-age kids in it. The divorced woman moved into the couple's house, and they also accommodated a Portland State student living in a bedroom in the basement. There are two cars in that household, and all the working people in that household ride transit. The family next door has four cars. So I would submit that we gave some housing choice to our neighbor who's living in the upstairs of our house and to the Portland State student who's living in our basement, and that we have less of a transportation impact than our neighbors with the teenage kids that own cars. So this is partly about housing choice. Obviously, the couple that accommodated those folks. And by the way, we didn't remodel the house, and if we did, we'd get permits. We're just having people living in the bedrooms for now. But, you know, we have a de facto arrangement there that these provisions could allow us to remodel and make permanent. Not likely to happen in our case because the Portland State student's going to graduate and go to New York, and Laurel bought a house in Milwaukee. But you see my point. This is about housing choice, not just about affordability. So I'm hearing these concerns about transportation, and I'm hearing these concerns about affordability, and they're legitimate, but I'm not sure that the constellation of housing choices is all that correlative to some of those questions, either of affordability or of transportation impact. So I'd like to hear more from the RIPSAC 7 group about those issues.
Well, what we have done is divided up the issues, so you will hear more.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Mile, and as you probably realize, I'm an immigrant. I only enjoined this because I wanted to talk about fairness. And I've lived in 3 countries and in 7 cities. I used to join in a line in the country I came from, which is a line where food stamps were piled. So I've been at the bottom and I've been near the top. And so this is a very important issue, fairness. So when I looked at all the material that was available, I thought I'd do it a different way around. I'll look, first of all, is this material being fair to the developers? I read through it and I read through it and I read through it again. It is being more than fair to the developers. At one time I thought it was written by them, but it is being very fair to them. The next thing, the housing opportunity overlay. I thought it was draconian. Why draconian? Because Draco was a legislature in Greece, and if somebody did something he didn't want, he had him put to death. That's the way he worked. And I think this is true as presented with this housing opportunity overlay, but I hear it's been moderated from what's been said today. But I also think that it has some merit if it's used in the appropriate way and not everywhere. Using it everywhere, opening up to every part of the city is not the way it should go. For instance, would it not make sense where people are complaining about gentrification to do something in their area, to put in housing that would be suitable to be bought by that group? Turning to affordability. How are we going to control affordability? I hear 400,000 twice or 750,000. That's huge amounts of money. How many people can buy a house like that? Is there not, in your purview, a way of legislating or even asking developers to do so much of their building at a cost that is far less? Is there a way to do that?
Yes,
I would press you to look at it.
Yes, we're actually about to do that. It's called inclusionary housing.
Okay, good. Well, I don't understand all this. As I say, I'm just a private citizen that's looked at these things. There's a group that's called Portland for Everybody. I take a little bit of a jaundiced view of that. All of us that come up today will be talking about a Portland for Everybody. It's not just that group. They're wearing a little lapel badge that says, I love housing choice. So do we all. All the people in the neighborhoods are there because that's where they chose to be. And why could they be there? Because they worked hard, they saved, and they became there. And they don't want it changed too much. But most of them will have some change and not feel badly about it.
I want to ask you to wrap up soon, please.
Okay, I will do. I'll wrap up now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your thoughts. Thank you. Thank you all.
The next three are Ruth Adkins, Nick Sovey, and Mary Kyle McCurdy. That's 11, 12, and 13. And they'll be followed by Paul Grove, Leslie Hammond, and Dylan Lamar, 14, 15, and 16.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome. I think you're first, Ruth.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for your leadership. So for the record, my name is Ruth Adkins. I'm with Oregon Opportunity Network, We're a statewide association of affordable housing and community development nonprofits with 20 members here in the Portland area. We want to express our strong support for this proposal. And our members, who are experienced mission-driven nonprofits, are eager to help shape this policy as it moves forward to maximize rental and homeownership options in all parts of Portland, not just the centers and corridors. The families our members serve are currently shut out of nearly every neighborhood in Portland. We need every possible tool to help address Portland's housing crisis. We believe that duplexes and garden apartments can absolutely coexist harmoniously with single-family homes, and why not support gentle infill like granny flats? We need all types and all sizes of housing in all price ranges, and this proposal is an important part of the solution to our housing crisis. I also want to express my support personally as someone who's been a homeowner in Portland since 1988, currently living in the Southwest neighborhood of Hillsdale. Longtime homeowners like myself have nothing to fear from this proposal. On the contrary, I strongly believe it will improve the fabric and the character of our neighborhoods and our community. Those of us who have adult children who are saddled with college debt, maybe a smaller, flexible housing option might make first-time homeownership a possibility for them so they can stay here in Portland where they were born. Many of us hoping to downsize into retirement would benefit from senior-friendly options like a granny cottage or a duplex or a flat within a larger home. Most important, I want to share the privilege of living in our wonderful Portland neighborhoods. I don't want to see families or renters or people of color excluded from our neighborhoods. Missing middle housing is an important part of the solution for our city's growth, so please support this thoughtful, sensible proposal so we can move forward to a Portland that is welcoming and accessible for all. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Nick Sovey. I'm owner of a couple homes in Kearns and in Woodstock, and I support the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's residential infill design standards, updating the city's zoning and development standards to allow plexes, row houses, and courtyard housing is an important step that will lead to development of more missing middle housing. These standards should apply across the city and not only in corridors. According to the Portland Housing Bureau's 2015 State of Housing in Portland report, home sale price inflation in East Portland has been the most rapid in the city. From 2011 to 2014, home price inflation in East Portland districts was as follows: Lentz Foster, 60.7%, Park Rose Argay, 41.5%, Pleasant Valley, 41.4%, 122nd and Division, 38.2%. These were the four highest price inflation districts in the entire city. This demonstrates that the housing affordability crisis is hitting hardest at the lower half of the market. Today, 80% of the residentially zoned land in Portland is reserved for single-family development. Limiting the supply of land available for moderately dense development is a simple supply and demand issue. Limiting supply will drive up costs. Creating more missing middle housing options is an important tool for addressing the housing affordability crisis in Portland. The housing bond that passed last night is an important step in that direction. I thank all of you for your efforts on that behalf. Permitting a greater diversity of options within the vast majority of residential zones is another. I hope City Council will take that step. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and members of the City Council. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy. I represented 1,000 Friends of Oregon on the Residential Infill Project Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Initially, I was not confident that our diverse group would reach a consensus on much, but after 15 months of frequent and long meetings, many walking tours, summer of open houses, surveys, and meetings with community-based organizations, two-thirds of your stakeholder advisory committee reached consensus on all three of the integrated topics presented to you. And that group represents nonprofit affordable housing providers, disability rights advocates, home builders, community-based groups, neighborhood associations, and more. My comments today are going to focus on one issue. The residential infill project fills in a significant gap in Portland's housing supply by providing smaller housing choices throughout our neighborhoods that are relatively more affordable for more of Portland's families. You will hear that Portland has plenty of zoned capacity for housing. However, as data from many sources shows, Portland has a gap of about 25 to 30% in the demand for and supply of smaller single-family and attached housing choices, the missing middle. That is needed in more neighborhoods, more closer in, and the lack of that is what's driving up our housing costs. Almost two-thirds of Portland's families are one- and two-person households. The 45% of the residential area zoned for single-family housing doesn't meet their needs, and not every family of a parent and a child or a single retired person wants to live on the fourth floor long division or in a downtown tower. The RIP proposal delivers family housing in family neighborhoods at a scale that meets the needs of more Portlanders. You'll also hear that the RIP proposal will not provide housing affordable to Portlanders. The economic report commissioned by you shows this to not be true. By reducing the scale of new dwellings and allowing more missing middle housing, the economic report demonstrates that more affordable housing will be provided. And you'll hear that the RIP should only apply to a narrow band around corridors and centers. Portland has always prided itself on being a welcoming community for all, and that means adapting to changing families and those of different economic, social, and racial backgrounds. This is not the time to shut some people out of some neighborhoods. The housing decisions you make are for the long term and should not be limited to today's transit routes, retail nodes, and a 1950s notion of a single-family zone. We need to evolve to reflect our changing family sizes and configurations, increased opportunities for duplexes, ADUs, triplexes, all within the same size structure as a single-family home, allows intergenerational living, aging in one's community, and homes for one- and two-person households. We urge you to adopt the proposal before you and direct your staff to go further to provide additional flexibility for affordability, tree preservation, and accessibility. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. You, I know we're going to hear from some disability rights activists mm-hmm. later, but you said the disability folks supported this. What in it do you feel is helpful for people with disabilities?
Commissioner Fritz and I should let Ellen De La Torre, who was on our the RIPSAC, can address that directly. It provides, so I don't want to put words in the mouth of the person who is representing that, but it provides more smaller housing options for those of a variety of ages and one-person households, people as they get older, in all neighborhoods. It allows people, right now in my neighborhood, there are no smaller options. There are larger single-family homes. To age in my neighborhood and downsize to a smaller unit is impossible, unless you want to live in your child's ADU or have rent out your ADU. But there are no smaller housing options. So it serves those as they age to be able to stay in the community with the places and the people they know and the services they know.
Thank you.
And I'll let Alan discuss he can talk more about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
The next three are Paul Grove, Leslie Hammond, and Dylan Lamar. That's 14, 15, 16. And they'll be followed by Mary Vogel, Sheila Greenlow Fink, and Julia Metz, 17, 18, and 19.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, Commissioner, for the record, Paul Grove with the Portland Home Builders. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I will try to be brief. I know it's been a long day, and you have a lot of other folks here. And I'm here in support of the draft concept and believe it's headed in the right direction. As Mary Kyle pointed out, there was some skepticism at the start of this process, and there was builder-developer representation from our association. You had the nonprofit communities out there. You had neighborhood groups. And I think what was enlightening for our members, who you will hear from either today or at the next public meeting, was that there was a lot more in common with folks in trying to address this issue than they ultimately realized. And in part of a working, what we think is a durable coalition around housing issues moving forward. And so I think, Mayor Hales, kudos to you for putting together such a diverse group of folks that had the city's best interests at heart. And it was not an easy process. It was a lot of time, energy, and effort, at times contentious, having watched some of the meetings. But at the end of the day, folks rallied around the issue. And a lot of the talk focused around affordability, focused around inventory and supply. And I would encourage the commission to look at the economics report and dive into what Johnson Economics has put forward. It's a very compelling document, and I would go further and ask Jerry to come present before council if he was willing, because I think it lays out a very cogent argument as to the issues. So I think it's really important at the end of the day for council to keep the momentum going on this front. When you can sit there and have 1,000 friends, some neighborhood groups, nonprofit community, opportunity network, and the home builders of the Portland area all together trying to work together on these issues, the last thing we want to see is that momentum stalled. So we do have an urgent issue in front of us. We don't want to lose that momentum. We think this is a great start point to keep that conversation moving and address this issue for not just today, but the future generation of Portlanders. It's very important that our kids, my kid, has an opportunity to live in this city. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name's Leslie Hammond, and I have never been here before.
Welcome.
Thank you. And up until about 6 months ago, I was a big fan of the city. I've always found city employees to be very respectful and helpful whenever they were doing anything on the street or making changes to the houses, whatever. So they left a terrific impression. But within the last 6 months, I've been looking at the infill residential project and have been getting more and more alarmed by it. Now, I will tell you, so I don't take up too much time, that I would agree with Mrs. Schwab, Mrs. Strunk, Jim, I don't remember what his last name was. The point of view that they presented is my point of view, and also is probably the point of view of my neighborhood. I live over in the Multnomah neighborhood, and I'm involved there. So you've asked for specific comments about what would work. I'm very concerned about density, in the sense that when people buy single-family residential houses, they have a sense of who their neighbors are. They're going to have a neighbor on each side. We all have gotten used to duplexes or triplexes on the corners, and that's been no problem. What I am very worried about is interleaving duplexes into residential streets for a couple reasons. One is a single-family homeowner buys their house, invests in it, usually keeps it up and beautifies it. I have lived next to apartment complexes and duplexes, and I can tell you that those owners are interested in getting income from the houses. They don't necessarily landscape. They don't improve things. And they basically can, not always, pull down the values of the whole street because of what they do. So I do not want to see duplexes and triplexes get interleaved in the neighborhoods. Second thing I'd say, if you're determined to do this with some refinement, I would suggest you do it in the four neighborhoods that it said they'd like to be the pilot neighborhoods. Do that for 5 or 7 years, then go back to those neighborhoods and see what they have to say about the effect of it. It is a trickle kind of effect. These neighborhoods will be built in different ways and slowly, and you'll get a sense of what's going to happen. We don't have the transportation, especially in the Multnomah neighborhood, to make it a completely walkable neighborhood. We only have a bus that comes through the neighborhood once in a while. We don't even have a bus after 9 o'clock at night. We don't have the MAX. We don't have the trolley. So by pushing density into it and approving apartment buildings and housing where they don't have to put off-street parking in, you're creating a real problem and congestion over there, and I'm sure that's true in other neighborhoods. So the other thing that's really important, and other people have said, is retaining the character of the neighborhood. In other words, really talking with the neighborhood associations about what they feel strongly about, what they see is the character of their neighborhood, and then work on developing a development plan that honors that but isn't, you know, stuck in the past. So thank you very much for your
time.
Thank
you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Dylan Lamar. I rent a duplex apartment in Southeast Clinton at 25th. It's in the block, so I like walking and biking to work and the grocery stores down the street. I use my aging car about once a week, and when it dies, I won't need to replace it. My duplex is an example of missing middle housing, and it's the reason my neighborhood is so walkable. It provides the critical mass density that can support the local ice cream shop and restaurants right down the street. It would also be illegal to build today. As a residential architect in Portland, I'm well aware of this. I see daily how the application of single-family zoning has overly constrained and degraded our historic, walkable, mixed-use neighborhoods. Single-family zoning is not what gave us our historic neighborhoods that we love so much. In 2013, my company designed Ankeny Row, a modest 6-unit courtyard housing development of duplexes and townhouses with no off-street parking. That's how we got to keep the courtyard. We didn't have a parking lot. It has been applauded by neighborhood residents and highly publicized. There are also historic examples like Ankeny Row throughout all of the most loved neighborhoods in the city. Despite this, Ankeny Row is nearly illegal in 80% of the housing area of Portland. My clients had to pay top dollar for the property that their dream could be built on. That's part of the reason we had to wait nearly 2 years before we were able to do another project like it, despite receiving an overwhelming number of inquiries. Single-family zoning was created across America out of a desire for socioeconomic segregation. It is exclusionary by nature and is highly dependent on the car and car parking. Single-family zoning did not give rise to the historic Portland neighborhoods we know and love. My family and my clients are willing to deal with some parking congestion in order to enjoy living in a walkable, socially diverse neighborhood, which, by the way, supports a way of life that can end climate change. Nobody takes a vacation to the suburbs. They vacation in historic, culturally rich, walkable neighborhoods. They might complain about parking there, but they don't have to get in a car if they don't want to. Let's get back to creating the kinds of neighborhoods where we don't have to get in a car if we don't want to.
Thank you. Ankeny Rose at 21st and Ankeny?
About 25th, South.
Yeah, 25th. Okay, yeah. I know the project.
And where do you park your aging car?
We actually have a driveway that is meant to be more of like a loading zone that we can. The original idea was to park two tandem smart cars in that would be car shared by the co-housing seven-unit community. We've fought tremendously to get through the zoning regulations to make that happen. It just doesn't fit in the rules, so it was difficult to make happen.
Thank you.
Yeah, because actually you can't park a car that is supposed to be moved every 24 hours. If you don't have a place to park it off the street, then it'd be a problem, wouldn't you?
Right. There wasn't an off-street parking requirement, so this was above and beyond. This was providing mostly a place where they could pull and unload groceries and then go park the car.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Mary Vogel, Sheila Greenlow Fink, and Julia Metz. That's 17, 18, and 19. And then we'll go with Ted Labby, who has a daycare issue, Al Ellis, and David Schollhammer, 20 and 21.
Okay, welcome. Mary, I think you're first.
Okay, so my name is Mary Vogel, and as a planning consultant who usually focuses her energy on the central city, I want to address why we need the mix of uses suggested in the residential infill project. I will also suggest several improvements that should be made to the current proposal. Of the four large cities on the West Coast from San Francisco north, Portland is the least dense. And I have a chart in my testimony that shows the population densities and all. The city of Portland takes up almost four times as much space as the cities of San Francisco and Vancouver, yet has a lower population, resulting in an average population density less than many suburbs. It's about a quarter of the density of San Francisco and Vancouver, just about half of Seattle's. A density of 6,400 people per square mile equates to 10 people per acre. However, population density matters for Portland if we are to support both our historic commercial districts and to add the additional 20-minute neighborhoods we claim we want in the climate action plan. More people on a given block leads to more customers, which leads to more variety in local services, which leads to a convenient lifestyle on foot or transit, which leads to building a happy city. I can't recommend this book enough. It's fabulous. You can't provide enough densities to support a beloved commercial node, much less build new retail nodes with single-family homes alone. We need to increase the overall density to at least 16 units per acre needed to support thriving retail. It is important to note that 16 units per acre is also the typical recognized minimum density needed for a place to be transit supportive. So I strongly support the housing choice recommendations and the residential infill project. In terms of recommendations, I've never understood why a city that is largely without alleys requires off-street parking. Curb cuts for private driveways should be taxed rather than required because they usurp at least one parking space per unit in the public realm. So I especially want to support the last point of Portlanders for Parking Reform, an organization founded by largely run by young people. The young people we should be planning for, by the way.
Thank you very much. If you can send us anything else like that, but that particular suggestion is very helpful. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales and councilors, my name is Sheila Greenlaw-Fink, and I reside at 628 Southwest Chestnut Street in the Hillsdale neighborhood. I know many of you enjoy the amenities and transit-friendly area that I live in, and I thank you for this opportunity to weigh in on the city's residential infill project. While we know that addressing our regional problems and those that are concentrated in the city are going to take a lot of different tools, I'm really excited about this one. I live just off Barber Boulevard and have access to great schools, again, incredible transit access, an amazing tree canopy, and walking to grocery stores, everything one could want in a neighborhood. And I would love to see more affordable options integrated into the neighborhood. I see activity under our current zoning. Probably a McMansion will go in next door on a lot, joining an 1890s farmhouse. And I'd rather see something else, frankly. We've got a lot of houses in that price range, and it would be great to have seen a cluster or maybe duplex, triplex, something else. So under the new zoning, I'm hopeful that we'll see more developers looking at different options and opportunities to bring a variety of housing choices into our neighborhoods. I think it's past time that we update the city's vision for the 21st century, and notably by looking back to what we knew was true so long ago when we did build really charming and a little bit denser neighborhoods. So we can learn a lot from the past. It'll help us address our significant supply-side gap and also assist us with demand-side pricing options. As a resident of an amazing neighborhood, I hope that you'll help us ensure that more households can join us in the future in such a high quality of life, and really appreciate what you've done in a variety of ways. But through this project, I know the work will continue, and I'll provide more detailed comments in writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Julianne Metz, and I'm here on behalf of Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives, or PCRI, to support this proposal. For over 20 years, PCRI has stood for providing affordable, stable homes for the community. We currently have over 700 affordable homes dispersed throughout North and Northeast Portland. This includes a mix of housing types that is reflective of the missing middle that the residential infill proposal looks to provide. Because of this, PCRI has seen firsthand just how valuable homes of this size can be, especially when dispersed throughout the greater community. It has allowed PCRI to meet the diverse needs of the people we serve, from families to the elderly and beyond. Housing choices that fall between single-family homes and apartments can also help address the historical inequities of access to self-sufficiency by providing homeownership opportunities. But we know there is still a shortage of housing choices in Portland. Currently, minimum lot sizes and density limitations constrain the number of homes that can be developed, limiting our opportunity to deliver affordable homes. By allowing for modest increases in density within the residential zones recommended in the proposal, it would open an opportunity not only for PCRI, but the market as a whole to provide homes for even more families when it comes to more families. When it comes to housing, every unit really does count. That is why we support the proposals put forth in the Residential Infill Project and see opportunities to further strengthen support for affordable housing development through the proposal. We think it is important to incentivize affordable and accessible homes to reflect the needs of the Portland community. So we recommend reasonable density bonuses for permanently affordable and accessible units to be added back into the proposal. With these additions, the residential infill proposal can play an important role in providing much-needed affordable housing for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Ted Labby, Al Ellis, and David Scholhammer, 20 and 21, and they'll be followed by Maria T. Mai, Merrill Reddish, and Allison Marchi, 22 and 23.
Okay, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Squeeze me in. I have to pick up my daughter here in a few minutes. My name is Ted Labby, and I reside in the Kearns neighborhood. And today I'm testifying on behalf of DPAVE, a Portland nonprofit that promotes interstitial green space in the city. In general, I want to support the direction of the residential infill project, but I have a few concerns and suggestions moving forward. We support changes recommended by Portland for Everyone strongly to extend the housing opportunity overlay zone to all residential zones citywide, offer incentives for development of affordable units, promote housing that is adaptable and accessible for people of all ages and mobilities, and what I'm going to talk about more today is incentivize on-site tree preservation. Carefully crafted zoning code revisions can promote more affordable housing and preserve neighborhood character, and also help the city with other worthy goals like tree preservation. The details of how the rules get written matter. Much of the public's concern with teardowns, redevelopment, and loss of neighborhood character is related to the loss of big trees in the neighborhoods. So how the residential infill project addresses tree preservation is an important detail to get right. We know from the recently completed citywide tree inventory that we're losing large form trees, which are being replaced by small and medium form trees with negative long-term consequences for the urban forest canopy. Although the urban forest is trending upwards, most of our available tree planting sites are too narrow or constrained by overhead wires to support large form trees. These two facts elevate the importance of preserving on-site large trees, particularly in residential yards. Title 11 tree preservation reforms offered some improved tools, but more work remains to be done. I'd like to recommend that you give careful consideration to your own Urban Forestry Commission's suggestions on the RIP, and those include three things, which I only have time to run through. Allow an additional dwelling unit in exchange for preservation of one or more large, healthy trees greater than 20 inches of diameter. Allow for flexible lot line setbacks in exchange for preservation of one or more large, healthy trees. And lastly, most importantly, a full waiver for on-site parking requirements to preserve big trees. Tree preservation can't continue to be an afterthought. We need to get tree-friendly designs into city staff thinking about tree-friendly designs up front. Look forward to working with you further as we continue to refine the residential infill project. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
I don't want you to miss your daughter, but quick question. In terms of extending the overlay citywide, the recommendation before us specifically exempts the David Douglas School District. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm going
they
with
carved
the,
it out even if it was to be extended. They've carved out that district.
I'm going with the Portland for Everyone because I think that sets a very dangerous precedent that school districts could you know throw this up as a barrier for this kind of thoughtful infill development. This is not some kind of overwhelming density. I live in a really thriving neighborhood, Buckman or Kearns, and you know the original Restaurant Row on Northeast 28th would not have happened without the mix of housing types that we have in that neighborhood. I would argue would not have happened, and that's all of Portland's now thriving food scene. It just probably wouldn't have happened if we didn't have you know, that mix of housing types and currents. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Al Ellis, and a few years ago when I was president of the Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Association, I responded to residents' concerns over the growing number of demolitions of single-family homes and the environmental fallout from the demolitions with the creation of a grassroots organization that we called United Neighborhoods for Reform. The idea was to see if the same concerns were shared by other neighborhoods. And our basic premise in our resolution, preservation of existing affordable housing is a citywide concern, eventually got endorsed by 43 neighborhoods representing over half the population of the city. Now, it's a concern that extends far beyond my backyard or your backyard, my block or your block. It's one shared by residents across the city. But preservation of viable existing homes does not necessarily preclude construction of additional housing units to accommodate increased density needs. The critical factor is context. An adoption of the BPS middle housing proposal would have the unintended consequence of opening the door for developers to demolish homes that are most affordable for entry-level buyers, like my grown children and your grown children. There's a demand for these entry-level homes that are much more affordable than the new homes that are being constructed that are, you know, almost $1 million in price. So it's important to preserve these homes. And by the same token, it's also important to expand the choices for others, as in the duplexes and the triplexes. But to build those duplexes and triplexes at the expense of the existing neighborhood is really destroying the village to save it, which I think would be a huge mistake, an irreversible mistake. So we urge the council to adopt a policy in which density needs can be addressed without having to bulldoze away the very character that has made Portland such a desirable place to live in the first place. A few weeks ago, I went to a forum where there was a representative from Los Angeles, and they're grappling with the same issues that we're grappling with today. And their approach is not to lump all the neighborhoods together with saying that with a one middle housing policy, but to give neighborhoods over a dozen choices, many different choices, and neighborhoods can opt to have a middle housing policy as is being suggested by BPS, or they can say, we want to preserve, we think it's really important to preserve the existing neighborhood. So that's something you might consider. Thank you.
Again, David, we're going to want to hear, Al, from you and others that are involved in this. I mean, back to my example, we live in an old house. If we converted our garage to an ADU and converted the house to a duplex that had a single door, I think most of our neighbors would say, hooray, great old house preserved, right? We don't have to do that to accommodate our neighbors on a short-term basis, as I mentioned. But so the question of the incentives and disincentives in this package the intent of this package was in part to give homeowners like me an incentive to keep that building there. I think that piece of this, I'm surprised.
I probably have
complete agreement about that piece.
Right.
Then the question is, we've had duplexes on corners for quite a while allowable. Is that okay? Can we go any farther than that? And then instead of a duplex, how about a triplex? I mean, we've got degrees of change here and incentives to keep and perhaps incentives to demolish, and I don't want any incentives to demolish. So, the tuning of this with your and other activists' recommendations is very important.
Mayor, can I just jump on that for a second?
Yeah.
Al, perhaps you could, in a follow-up writing to us, you said unintended consequence, and so I'll just give you I'll pose the question and ask you it maybe in writing in an email just to give us your guidance. So, I used to be roughly your neighbor, and the houses you're talking about are the bungalows and the smaller bungalows in the Grant Park, Hollywood, Alameda area that are about, some of them are like 1,200 square feet. They're very efficient. I'm now a renter, and I live in an apartment of about 1,100 square feet with my family, so it's compact living, but I get to walk to work. But of those 1,200, 1,300-foot bungalows, they were once upon a time the affordable housing in the neighborhood. And I've seen over time them demolished, and in the footprint comes a monster house about, with three times the square footage. So when you say the unintended consequence might be to demolish those sort of starter homes, and there are a lot of those starter homes in 97212 in that vicinity, would you just spell out what events could occur that could have that unintended consequence?
What we're worried about is if this were adopted, that this would be kind of a sanctioned policy by the city council to increase the number of duplexes and triplexes, et cetera, to accommodate greater density. And with this kind of council-sanctioned approach, we think developers would be very anxious to get in there and to convince people, as they're doing right now, they're convincing people to sell their homes, give them a good price, and then build the huge homes that are not compatible with the character. We're afraid the same thing would happen in terms of building the triplexes and duplexes, et cetera. We're not opposed to, building these things. We just don't want to destroy the existing neighborhoods.
And your fear is that's the stock of quote-unquote affordable starter homes, although we've established they're not that affordable, but they 400,000 plus or minus.
If you're looking for a home here,
in comparative terms, in that zip code, and replacing it with an affordable rental, but that's the trade-off you want us to grapple with.
Yeah, if the rental is going to be affordable.
Well, that's why the economic report and your and other people's subsequent assistance and specifics about this is going to help, because we've had 700 houses demolished.